E-12 Policy Committee will come to order. My name is Jim Carlson, and Senator Wieger has graciously opted to let me chair the meeting today. And members, we have an incredible treat for us here. At this point, the House is still in session, so there may be people that will be coming in to sit with us, but we will get started anyway. And I'm really looking forward to hearing this presentation, because in my case, I'm right now the engineer in the Senate. And I got the incredible opportunity to go over to Eagan High School and watch this team work in the back, in the background, down in the shops, and talk to them, and then go to their competition. And I was just overwhelmed. And this is infectious. It infects everybody who comes in contact with it. And I've gotten so excited about it that I had to see them come here and share this with all of you folks. So without any more waste of my words here, I'm going to call on the first presenter, Mr. Mark Lawrence. And what we're going to do is have you sit at the table and speak into the microphone and say your name before you start for the recording. And then feel free to show your presentation. And what we'll do is we will stop for questions after every major group. So it'll be after Mr. Lawrence and then after all the students have completed their particular pieces. So go right ahead.
I'm Mark Lawrence. I'm the chairman of the Minnesota Regional Planning Committee. So we were the group that hosted the event that Senator Carlson went to a couple weeks ago at Williams Arena. I've been involved with FIRST for 3 years. I started out on a team as a mentor, and we'll hear from some mentors later on in the presentation. And then getting involved with the program, I noticed there were two teams in Minnesota, and I said, ooh, this is bad. There's something wrong with this. We got some corporate funding from Medtronic and Boston Scientific. We grew it to 16 teams last year, which is when Eagan joined. And then this year we had 54 teams, and our goal for next year is to have 80 teams, all corporately funded, including the event that we hosted at Williams Arena. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to give you a real quick introduction to FIRST. It's an organization that's been around for a number of years. There were 1,500 teams this year participating from around the world. We just finished the championship over the weekend down in Atlanta, Georgia, at the Georgia Dome, where there were 344 teams participating in a playoff competition. So, okay, first of all, the vision of the program. You know, what we're really trying to do is change the culture. You know, there is a lot going on today that, if you're in the education business, doesn't sit well. You know, the amount of money that professional sports people are paid, the amount of money that CEOs are paid, the people that we celebrate out of Hollywood. And what we're really trying to do is we're trying to get sort of push the pendulum back and get it to the point where we are celebrating educational accomplishments, where we're enticing kids to get into various kinds of fields. I know when I grew up, it was, you know, okay, we're going to try and put a man on the moon. You know, these kids don't have that as a goal, but there are a whole bunch of other goals that they should be involved with. And everyone here knows how few engineers and scientists we're putting out. So we're really trying to change that culture. We're trying to celebrate science and technology, and we're doing that through a competition. So FIRST has been around since 1989. It was founded by Dean Kamen. Unfortunately, we couldn't get Dean today because he's coming tomorrow to do a keynote speaker at the Spring IT Conference at the University of Minnesota. He's an entrepreneur. He's an inventor. You probably know him well right now because of the Segway. It's that little two-wheeled vehicle that runs around. But he's really done a lot of medical products, you know, and his current projects are prothesis and clean water, believe it or not. So the company's headquartered in Massachusetts. The first competitions were in the early 90s, and it's had a continual growth since then. There are lots of aspects to it. Some of you may have heard of FIRST Lego League. There are 330 teams in the state of Minnesota this year in FIRST Lego League. We played with something called FIRST Tech Challenge this year. A number of teams hosted FIRST Tech Challenge, which are small robots. It's kind of like the Erector sets that we knew as kids. a little less sophisticated than the big robots that you see here, and certainly a lot cheaper. The kit to do that program is about $900. So, and this one is, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 to actually build and compete with it. There's also a new junior FLL. So even trying to get a kids at a younger age. So here's the span that FIRST provides programs for. And you can see it really takes in the whole gamut. We've sort of filled in with the FIRST Tech Challenge because we thought we were starting to lose kids in sort of 7th, 8th, and 9th grade by not providing enough of a challenge for them with a Lego program. So we decided to get them into robots. And that's we're gonna spread that program next year throughout the state. And it, so the kids can go through Legos, and then they can jump right into the small robots and then right into the big robots. And hopefully we won't lose their interest in math and science along the way, which has been the case before. So here's sort of the continuum, and this is a build slide. I apologize for that. But what we're really trying to do is we're trying to nurture these kids all the way along, you know, with different aspects of what they're capable of being attracted to at the time. You know, when you finally get out of it, the kids are, you know, and I'm proud to say this, we've got high school kids now that are getting internships at corporations around the Twin Cities. And that's a big milestone for us to hit after just a couple of years being in this program. So we're pretty excited about that. Then they go on to college, and they come back, and they mentor programs, and you'll meet John Congdon in a little while who's done just that. So it really is a continuous cycle. It's self-feeding, and it's infectious, which is why I spend all my time doing it. So everybody goes, well, what is it really? You know, it's not really a sport. You know, it's not like football where we replace the ball with a robot. Even though we've got a big ball here today, you know, that's just this year's game. It's really about creating a team, having teamwork, and then developing all the different aspects that you have to actually build a company to actually play this game. You know, you've got to do fundraising. You've got to do marketing. You've got to do finance because you have to turn in your finances at the finals or when you're in a competition so they know you haven't spent too much money on your robot, and on and on and on. The thing that really differentiates it's something we call gracious professionalism, and that is if everybody shares what they're doing, the whole aspect of the program gets better. So I often tell people this, and you know they don't believe me, so they try it out and they find out it's true. There's a website that's hosted by a team out of northern Detroit, and you can get on that website, and it's got forums. People put questions, whether they're mentor putting questions, kids putting questions. You can get on that site at 3:01 in the morning on a Saturday during the build season, and at 3:02, somebody will have answered your question. Kids post their robots, they post their mechanisms, and that way you get what you see here, an extremely sophisticated device that was built in 6 weeks. And without that cooperation amongst the teams, you'd never have that happen. So, you know, this idea of co-opetition is prevalent through the whole program. We're not educators. And I know there's always a lot of questions. You know, I sort of look at something like Project Lead the Way and say, you know, that's the education part of it. What we are is we're really the sport for Project Lead the Way. So we're really trying to give the kids an outlet for the things they learn in science and technology and to help them promote those ideas, to use those ideas, to exercise their talents in creating a robot, but in the bigger picture, learning a lot about themselves and how to behave as a team. I won't read the slide. You got a copy of my slides. And later on, I'll come back up and I'll talk about, you know, how we know all this is true. With that, I'd like to introduce Devin McKinnon, who's a member of the Team 2220, Blue Twilight, from Egan High School. She was one of the founding members of the team, and she'll have the kids take you through what they do on the team. Devin?
Thank you, Mr. Lawrence.
Did you have any questions?
Were there any questions from the committee?
We can take them later.
No questions. Let's continue. Speak up real good and close to the mic.
Yep.
And say your name, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Devin McKinnon. It's spelled DevinMckinnon. I am one of the co-captains on the team, and this year we went to two regional competitions. We went to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and we also went to one here in Minnesota. In Wisconsin, we received the website award, and in Minnesota, we also got the website award, and we also were awarded the Delphi Award, and we placed third with an alliance there, too. This activity has proven to be very popular. Last year, we had about 15 students on the team, and this year, we have now 30. Last year, we had about 5 mentors. Now, we have grown to about 15 mentors. It is also a very diverse team. We have students from all different backgrounds and all different academic tracks. This program is a very expensive program. We have students that need to make presentations to potential sponsors and keep our money in track. The sponsors come from all over the community. Like, we have Lockheed Martin, who is one of our main sponsors, and we also have smaller companies like our local Hardware Hank and Marty Chiropractic also helping us out. First Robotics is not a program for students to start building fighting robots. At the beginning of each year, we start off with the kickoff, which was at the University of Minnesota this year, and that was on January 5th. At this kickoff, we get a new game each year, and then right after the kickoff, we now have only 6 weeks to build a robot, which I wish we had much more time. We only get $3,000 to add on to our robot. That's including, like, all the sensors we want to add on. Like, this year we added a camera, which did cost quite a bit of money. Before I show you a video about the game animation in one of the games, I would like to share with you that these competitions aren't just a thing where students, you go there and other adults come and watch, oh, that team looks good. No, it's an exciting event. We have, if you walk into the stadium, there's people roaring for their robots and cheering. And there's also a big screen of the scoreboard, and they also have referees and judges during the event. And I hope that everybody that actually saw the competition or hear about it would also be as excited for technology and science as I am. I'll show you the video now.
Welcome to the 2008 FIRST Robotics Competition and this year's game, FIRST Overdrive. Overdrive is played on a 27 by 54 foot carpeted field. Two alliances of 3 teams each occupy the ends of the field from where they control the robots. Each team is composed
you can
of drivers,
take the mic out
a coach,
and, put it down.
And a new position, the RoboCoach. The center of the track is spanned by the overpass, which is 6.5 feet above the floor. A 6 foot tall lane divider runs down the midline of the track. The two structures help define the finish lines. The game pieces for FIRST Overdrive are 40-inch diameter inflatable balls known as track balls. There are 2 for each alliance. The objective of Overdrive is to have each alliance move their robots and track balls around the track as rapidly as possible and gain points each time they cross their finish line. Bonus points are earned every time a track ball passes over the overpass. RoboCoach stations are located at the corners of the track. Robots start the match lined up against their alliance wall. Starting positions for the track balls are randomly determined before each match. The match starts with hybrid mode, when robots can autonomously navigate around the field and gather points for each line they cross. Alliances will also get a bonus for each of their track balls that is removed from the overpass before the hybrid period ends. During the hybrid period, the RoboCoaches can pass signals to the robots to give them cues to alter their gameplay. At the end of hybrid period, the human players step forward and take control of the robots. As teleoperated period starts, robots continue to race around the track and score points each time they cross their own finish line. When overtaking slower machines, robots can signal a desire to pass by gently bumping. Robots can move trackballs around the field by bumping and hurting them. Or the trackballs can be captured and possessed. Trackballs score each time they cross their own finish line. 2 points for going under the overpass, 8 points for going over. Robots will have to be built robustly to avoid damage from falling trackballs. Trackballs placed back on the overpass at the end of the match will earn a special 12-point bonus. Of course, they have to stay there. Good luck, and we'll see you at the competitions.
Number 68. We've got hybrid mode. Five of the six robots moving. Teleoperator mode with a 12-4 advantage, red. Drivers now have control of the robots. All six of them are moving. There goes the first blue trackball, knocked down by 2401, the Patriots. Second ball knockdown. It's a red one by 2220 Blue Twilight. And there goes the other blue one. 2220 Blue Twilight trying to sweep off with that broomstick the second red ball, but that's still up there. Under a minute and a half to go. We're down to 81 seconds. Here come the Cubs. Scoring for the Red Alliance with a successful hurdle. That's 877. Nicely done. Plenty of time left to go in the match. Red with a slight advantage here. Cubs in possession of that red ball. Working their way around, coming now up to the red finish line. Little interference by 2502. But here come the Cubs and they score it. Nicely done. We go down under 50 seconds. We're down to 48. Red continuing to lead in this match. Cubs have the red ball again. Now the Patriots knock off that final red ball. So there are none up there on the overpass. Cubs, though, holding that red ball way up high, trying to score it with 25 seconds. Trying to get in position. They actually place it there. They're going to try to leave it there for the bonus. 15 seconds now. 12 seconds. But the Patriots are going to try to knock it right off. And they do. Now that's still going to count for a successful hurdle. And there's a hurdle now by their partner, Blue Twilight, with 2 seconds. One. So the Red Alliance.
Okay, we're gonna stop it there actually. As you can see, our robot always did not like succeed, but we were able to learn from those mistakes, and later on we were able to work that broom perfectly and we got it every time. As Mark pointed out, FIRST is not just a program where we just build robots. FIRST is a program that is a year-long program, and we actually work with other teams, such as the LEGO Robotics teams, and we mentor them. And we also ran a few LEGO Robotics camps this year. This year we were able to teach elementary-age students about the fundamentals of robotics, and they would learn through Mindstorm kits that we would provide them, and they had a different challenge each day for a week. We also ran a VEX workshop this year for middle school age students and some of our team members to use the Erector-like set robots to get the process of design across. We also went to a few science fairs for elementary age students, and we brought the VEX robots, and they were able to get very excited about the technology within those robots and how we program those too. The first experience is very real life. I was able to be the project manager of the team, where I was able to watch and make sure everything was getting done. Like, we had a group working with our business group, worked with the financials of our team, and we were able to sit down for hours and crunch numbers, which was a lot of fun. And we also had other subgroups that were worked on building the robot, and I was able to help with that, and then the programming, and then we also had other groups with working things like making a field and the crate our robot had to be shipped in. The mentors have told us that we have learned to be very reliable and dedicated to FIRST. As Deem came and did warn us before I started, this will be the hardest fun I'll ever have. Well, it was. When I started last year, I wasn't very up to it because I was going to be in, I was also in mock trial at the time, which was kind of hard to manage both of them. But when they both got me involved, it was amazing. I was able to get involved and start learning the basics of engineering. I learned to think on my feet, the leadership skills I needed, and the communication with adults. One group that had a very intense experience was the mechanical and electrical group, which they'll soon talk to you, but I would like to introduce the people who are going to be talking to you beforehand. We have Tim Hendrickson. He would developed as the electrical and mechanical person on our team. We have Matthew Miller, who was on the mechanical team. We have Madison Weldon, who was one of our business leads. Over here we have Louis Chapdelaine, who was a lead of a part of the mechanical groups, and Jason Lacroix. And Kelly Hotchkiss, who is the media. And then also one of our mentors, John Condon, who really helped us out through all of this. So those weren't in any order, but so without any further ado, I'd love to give the mics to Matthew Miller, Louis Chapdelaine, and Tim Hendrickson.
Thank you. Thank you. Please state your name for the record and hold your microphone fairly close to you.
I'm Matthew Miller. That's spelled M-A-T-T-H-E-W-M-I-L-L-E-R. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Matthew Miller, and I am a sophomore at Eagan High School. I have been on this team for 2 years. I have a high interest in metal mechanics. I spend my late nights with my fellow teammates trying to create a robot in 6 weeks. And all of you may be interested in to know why. I will reveal to you my experiences. I will start with prototyping, next the struggles I had, and how both of these have affected my education. Let's all step into the new world of robotics. We have 6 different mechanical groups working on this robot. The drivetrain, the claw group, which is the group I was in, the mast, the electrical, the bumper, and the sensor group. The season started calmly, with a very long week of design. We were partially done with design when we finally got to cutting and prototyping. Prototyping was one of the most exciting experiences I've had. We first started off in a basement with a bunch of shop machinery. It was a standard classroom with the whiteboards, and we had to figure out how to pick up this 40-inch diameter ball. The classroom didn't even have enough desks for everybody. The adults were behind us listening to what we had to say and offer. We already had 2 designs. The design we chose, I didn't think would work. But prototyping helped me use my mind and see the solution. We used VEX models, which is basically a more mechanized tinker toy set. There were many struggles I had, and there were hectic emotions. As I watched the mast group starting to set up the mast, and it really started to look good, the drivetrain was in the other corner, making the wheels starting to move, and the whole place was just full of teammates working. Our group kept struggling on the claw we needed to build. We needed to figure out what angles to cut the angle bar at. I learned a lot while on these two teams, throughout the 2 years on this team. One of the most important would be problem solving. We needed to figure out what didn't work and why it didn't. And then we also needed to figure out what we needed to do to change that. Also, we worked together a lot. We gathered ideas from all the people sitting at the table and then combined them to see what would work best. Now, my teammate Lewis can give you a different perspective and further explanation on this topic and his experiences.
My name is Lewis Chapdelaine, LouisChapdelaine. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, as I said, my name is Lewis Chapdelaine, and I am a freshman at Egan High School. This is my first year on the team, but during it, I have been the leader of the claw team and have also been on the drive team at regionals. My adventure with robotics started when Mr. Lynch, my neighbor, who is the adult leader of the team, brought me to the startup meeting of last year. There I saw the team prepare for their drivetrain and the rest of their basic plans. That's when I knew that I was going to join robotics later. Over the summer, I went to a VEX tournament, which, as Matthew said, the VEX are like a miniature version of this, made out of pre-constructed parts. The robot was to go through contests of speed, controllability, and other sport competitions involving Nerf balls. This gave me some of the greatest experience I've had in robotics and what it had to contain. After that, I joined the team when I entered into the high school. We went through the pre-build season, and we learned how to design, and those of us who wanted to went through a leadership training. Then, on January 5th, the build season began. The full team started designing a very basic robot to meet the models. And the smaller team went through every detail that you can imagine, down to individual parts. That's a lot. Oh, thank you. This was us designing. That bar was going to be used later in a demonstration of our arm as we went through explaining the different types of arms. This was our first drawing of the robot. As you can see, it's not extremely detailed, but it got the point through at the time. Here was us doing a demonstration of how one type of arm could have worked. And then, after this, we began building. Our claw team had some troubles. We were always having to change our design to meet other designs that had to be there. Other teams were able to be successful, but ours had to slow down a little bit and finish. In the end, however, we caught up with the other teams and got it attached to the robot in time to test. These are some of our plans for the claw and how it would have to be built. And this is us building our claw, at the time attaching it to be welded. And here is us attaching the finger, which ended up being removed in favor of this broom that you see on now. And this is the claw in action as it is right now. Then we began testing. The first testing we did wasn't at the regional, though most of it was. In our cafeteria, we set up our own little field to practice with the ball and other teams. We didn't get much done there, but we quickly realized that the finger wasn't working right. We had to redesign it a couple times to be able to grab the ball properly. Even then, it had troubles. Then we shipped the robot off for the regional. We went there and immediately began working on the robot, trying to correct the finger, do some last-minute programming, get it in working order for our matches. I was on the drive team, and that was when the spirit of robotics came alive. When we walked out onto the field, our entire team started cheering. And once the 2 minutes and 15 seconds began when we were driving the robot, that's when the intensity of the competition really took place. We placed in multiple awards, the biggest of which was the semifinals, along with our alliance members. We won the Chief Delphi Award, which is in part because of our broom, though there are other mechanisms that might have contributed. At both regionals, we won the website award, which we can give credit to a couple of students, but many members of the team helped. I have gained an experience in technology that will last an entire lifetime. I gained a leadership role in cooperation with others. To be a leader, sometimes you have to be a servant. It'll help my future with a career in engineering and technology, and it'll give me the ability to lead a company or a project. An ability to work with others on the project is essential, and the entire robotics team gained this. Thank you for your time and attention, and now I ask that you turn your attention to Tim Hendrickson, a member of my team and a key part of the integration of electrical wiring on the entire robot.
Hello, Mr. Chairman and other members of the committee. My name is Tim Hendrickson, T-I-M-H-E-N-D-R-I-C-K-S-E-N. I worked on the claw team and the electronics team, as Lewis said before. I helped design it and build the claw. But towards the end, we needed an electronics person, and the claw team was about done with their work. So I volunteered because I thought it'd be fun and interesting. I got to work with the Lockheed engineer, John Condon. That was really cool because I got to learn a lot from someone who actually uses it for something. And I became one of the main wiring people along with Devin. I learned about electronics, wiring, and I learned how to solder, which was a really fun thing for me. I learned how to use shop tools like the bandsaw and the milling machine. Milling machine took a while. This was a really great experience, and I was really sad when it ended because it was kind of boring. I didn't really have anything to look forward on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I think a lot of other kids would really enjoy FIRST, and I highly recommend FIRST Robotics. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to speak to you, and now I'd like you to give your attention to the programming, business, and media team representatives.
But first, do we have any questions from anyone, for any of us?
Mr. Wardlow. Representative Wardlow is here.
Thank you. I'm sorry I'm late, but I was kind of tied up on the House floor for a minute. But I'm glad I'm not teaching anymore. You guys are too smart for me. I was just curious. You said two nights a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, you worked on this, and it must have been after school. And I'm just, yeah. It seems to me that you probably had many hours beyond that. And yeah. I wonder how it affected your other, I'm sure the other teachers didn't care. They still have their math tests, English tests, whatever tests mm-hmm. to give. How did that affect your other studies? I'm just curious.
Anyone? Mr. Chaptolini.
Chairman, it affected our other studies, but only in a very slight way. Sometimes when we had to work long hours and didn't have as much time for homework, we would see a slight dip. But in most cases, robotics has helped because we've understood stuff in the real world and been able to apply it to what we're studying.
You also use your study halls more.
Thank you. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and students. I used to be an art teacher, and I loved science, too. And I think that inspiration is one of those things. It's kind of that aha moment. Can you tell us about the aha moment that led to the broom?
Yes. Matt, I think you should take this one.
Chairman, Miller. Senator Rollin. The broom first came along when we decided we need something that was broom-like to sweep the balls off. So, what better else to be broom-like than a broom itself? After testing it out and trying it a couple of times, it sort of worked, so we stuck it on a robot, and it's been on there ever since.
We have made some slight changes to the design. Before, it was mounted solidly to the back of the arm. Since then, as you saw in our beginning movie, we struggled a little bit because the arm would flex down a lot more. In the end, we found a way to control it separately by pushing the arm up as we swept. And that's how we ended up mastering sweeping the ball off.
And I would suggest, Mr. Chair and students, that that's exactly what creativity is all about, is thinking outside the box, taking things from one totally different realm and attaching it to a new realm and coming up with a new solution. So I think this is just a terrific example of how creativity plays into engineering as well as so many other things in your lives.
Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, I'm curious, did you guys start with just a pile of aluminum, or did you have a prototype that you built this from? And then for like the things like the welding and cutting up the materials and doing all fabbing all that, did you guys do that yourselves? Or
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Senator Olsen, we had a pile of aluminum sitting in the back of the workshop, and technically, it never was the team's. It was scraps that some of it I've seen around the school, so I suspect it's been there since the school's construction, somewhere around 18 years ago. Most of the supplies, like the motors and the chains, were bought or given to us by FIRST when we began the season. But much of the framework of the robot, except for the drivetrain, which was also given to us by FIRST, most of the framework was in our workshop that we had to make ourselves. The chain guards in particular were mostly teachers' work because we were in crunch time and needed it done fast.
Senator Saltzman.
Yes. A great presentation, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this group to us today. I noticed that you mentioned, one of your team members mentioned, that this program is very expensive, and I think it's wonderful that you have people in your community, such as Lockheed Martin and Thompson West, who can invest in this. But so I'm listening to you and how much you got out of this. What advice might you give us? Because I think about the school districts throughout the state, many of them in greater Minnesota, who may not have this opportunity if they don't have corporate support or they don't have the ability to stay after school. And so I think there was a question about, you know, how you kept up with your school classes. And I see all this excitement and wonder, well, is this the kind of thing we should be teaching? Is this kind of what should be in our curriculum versus it's an extra after school that requires outside funding? That maybe that's way too complex of a question for you, but I think it's helpful for us because we see young people so engaged here, and we see you taking away that spark that's going to help you continue to see why you need to take all these classes in science and math, because you can see what it results in. Can you kind of respond? Do you perhaps see what I'm asking you here?
Yes, I can.
Capitoline.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, I admit that we do spend an awful lot of time on robotics. We spend most of a Saturday afternoon, Monday after school, and then Tuesday and Thursday nights. However, in a classroom environment, I believe this class can be very helpful, but you can't get the full experience out of it if you're only limited to class times. And you need mentors. Mentors are one of the biggest things that help us succeed, because the students themselves don't know enough to put together a robot that works this efficiently. So class, you could do a class like this, but it doesn't have quite the same effect that having it be an extracurricular activity can be. On the side of affecting our studies, it does a little bit, but there's always time. Even on days that we have meetings, there's always some time after dinner or before it that we usually have time to work on our studies. So it does actually strengthen your interest in science and technology for other classes. Many of our team members, like Dana and Devin McKinnon, are co-captains. Dana is in aviation, and many of us are in some other tech ed courses like that. So, in a sense, this strengthens everything that the other classes build up.
Representative Greiling, first, before you say that, I think, is the House's recess going to expire?
We're not in recess.
You're not in recess. Okay, so you do not need to go back?
Yes,
oh, yes.
You need to, you are You are in session. Okay. I did want to answer one question that Senator Saltzman had. In Greater Minnesota, we have teams in Brainerd, Cloquet, Duluth, Hibbing, Morris, Roseau, and even in Woodbury.
I know. So,
Representative Griley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was a good lead-in. I was just going to say those of us in the House are still in session, and there's no telling how our seatmates are voting us, so we are going to have to go back very soon. So I just wanted to say before I go that I would much rather be here. This is much more interesting than what is going on the floor of the House of Representatives. I have a son-in-law who also is an engineer with Lockheed Martin out in the Washington, D.C. area. So I'm going to certainly encourage him to get involved in this for my granddaughter at her school. She's 3 and a half, so he has some time to get ready. But I'm just so impressed with what you're doing here, and I only wish that we could see that robot go. I guess they tell us we can't see it in this room. But it's very impressive, and I just have one question then before we do have to go back. How many males versus females are involved in robotics?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we do encourage
Mr. Miller, yes.
Female participation. Like we've mentioned before, our two captains are females. We have many women and girls participating on this team, and we encourage it fully. I'm not sure of the exact ratio as it is.
I happen to know.
Mr. Chaplin.
Based on the rooming at the hotel when we went to Milwaukee, which was split up due to Mr. Lynch, I know it was important, but that's the way it is. We had 11 rooms for the boys and 2 rooms for the girls, housing 3 people each. So if that can kind of give you an idea of how it's split up.
Thank you very much. But then it's very wonderful that the girls have been elected leaders or however they manage that. So, but I used to be a Girl Scout leader, Mr. Chair and members, and we had some partnerships with the Science Museum for girls taking science and math as well. And I hope that I'm glad girls are involved. I'm glad they're leaders. And it looks like we have to do some more recruiting, though.
Can we hold your question for just a moment, or is it a quick one?
No, I was just.
Oh, you're ready to go? Go ahead.
Oh, I was just, before we have to go. I just wanted
Representative Wardlow.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sure the girls had the quality, though. Is that correct? I just kind of speaking up. Maybe not. That's what I'm. The looks I'm getting, but you're probably right. I just wanted to. I always take every chance I can to brag about Eagan High School and 196 in general, but. You folks have just made me even more proud of Eagan High School. Which college are you guys in now? You're doing, you're only a freshman sophomore. That's amazing. Well, thanks a lot for coming, and go Wildcats.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Representative Wardlow. And now the next group, ready to go?
Oh, man.
While you're getting ready, I'm wondering what kind of encouragement it might take for you to fire up the robot out in the hallway later on. Is that a possibility?
Maybe.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jason LaQuay, JASONLAQUA. I'm a sophomore at Eagan High School. I'm a member of the programming team on Team 2220. There are 5 members on the programming team who are responsible for writing code for the teleoperated and autonomous functions of the robot. The only requirements for being a part of the programming team is having an interest in computers and being open to learning. The experience I gained from being a part of the programming team included learning the C programming language, as well as problem-solving skills, learning to work in both small and large groups, perseverance, and the ability to meet strict deadlines. I could bore you with the coding language I learned, but some of the stories I'll share with you capture the essence of the experience I gained from robotics. It was crunch time, the night before the shipping deadline, and we wrote a program so the robot's camera could track a red ball. We uploaded the program and turned on the robot to see if it would work. The robot powered on and started spinning in place. We were perplexed. The robot was supposed to align itself with the red ball. Instead, the camera was picking up all the exit signs. It took us a few minutes to realize what was happening. The robot was detecting the red glow of the exit signs around the school cafeteria, correcting itself, and then moving to the next exit sign and just continued spinning. Without real-life application of my code, I would never be able to account for factors in the outside world. As a part of the game, the first 15 seconds of the competition, the robot was in hybrid mode, where the robot had no controller input except for infrared transmissions. If everything worked flawlessly, we could earn many points. Therefore, our goal was to write a program that allowed some control by using infrared transmissions. We struggled with getting the robot to perform in the Milwaukee competition. In fact, our efforts got the robot to perform in the pit as expected, but never on the competition floor. In fact, it failed so miserably, our robot received a yellow card, a serious penalty, one of only two given out during the entire three-day competition. The seriousness of the yellow card made us unwilling to attempt hybrid mode without serious modification. By the end of the Milwaukee competition, we modified the hybrid mode so it would strictly rely on distance sensors. This gave us the courage to try the hybrid mode before the end of the competition. It was successfully able to earn points for our team. The story doesn't end here, however. We had more problems with the hybrid mode at the Minnesota competition, but for different reasons. Modifications the mechanical team made to the robot forced us to rewrite some code for the hybrid mode. Keep in mind, we had a finite amount of time to work on these problems. Robots could only be worked on at a competition during specific pit hours. Even with these limitations, we were able to develop a successful hybrid mode that earned us enough points to be selected by another team to advance to the elimination matches. In school, you finish an assignment, hand it in, and get graded. You never are able to make improvements on that assignment. In robotics, you get the chance to fix your mistakes and make improvements before the next match. My first year in the robotics program was more work than I expected, but I also gained much more than expected. Instead of learning from textbooks, I was able to receive advice and guidance from software engineers in the business world. Many of these mentors commented that the process we were following matched the process they used to develop software at companies such as Lancet Software, Thomson Reuters, and the University of Minnesota. My experience this year increased my interest in computers and engineering, and I look forward to my second year of robotics. Although the robot would have done nothing without programming, there would not even be a team without the business team. Therefore, I will turn it over to Madison to explain the business team.
Hello, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Madison Weldon. It's spelled MadisonWeldon. I am a member of Team 2220's business team. When I first joined the team in ninth grade, it was because my mom wanted me to. I thought it was going to be all about a robot, which seemed stupid to me. However, FIRST Robotics is much more. Now, in my 10th grade year, the team has pulled together a great amount. We have business mentors who are Mr. Lamont and Mr. Sorensen. They would sit us down and spend a whole meeting just teaching us what a budget is and how to make one. They also taught us marketing, and we realized we needed to get our team known. So we started putting our team logo on everything. We put it on thank you letters and emails that we sent out to companies and businesses or to people that just donated. Soon after what you might call training, because there was only four of us, we decided we needed to split the jobs up. First, we have Alex Sorensen, a freshman, who is not here. He was in charge of budget, and keeping track is no easy task. All the money and donations must be compiled to reach a total of $60,000. This amount funds our team for 1 year. Next, we have me, and I took over marketing. Then we have Kelly Hotchkiss. She was our team's information storage. She would keep track of every person and mentor's information and the businesses that donated. This was very important because she would tell Alex how much people donated so he could plug that into the budget. And she would tell me so I could send out thank you letters to the people that donated. And last, we have Patrick Lochran, a freshman. He was the team's liaison. He knew what every team was doing and would keep track. That way, he could write a weekly update to send to our team sponsors and also put it on our team's website. These events were no ordinary event. You could call them a mix of a sport, a pep rally, and a science fair all together. There was lots of music, lots of cheering, and lots of dancing. There was judges and referees in black and white striped shirts, and they even danced. Every team is wearing their team uniform and shouting cheers the team has made up or taken from other teams. Everyone gets excitement happening. Even parents start cheering and yelling. The competition is a time to have fun. We have finished and completed our goal, so we just burst out with energy and celebrate a good year. The business team season never ends. We are always looking for sponsorships and renewing old ones from companies like Lockheed Martin, Thomson Reuters, all the way to our local Hardware Hank. We also do a lot of fundraising during our off season for next year's season. But we do not just look for those kind of things. We are just trying to get the team known, because this is a great program that gives you real work-life experiences with real people from businesses, and it's with many people from many different backgrounds, and it doesn't just teach you about programming, electrical, and mechanical things. It also teaches you respect, honesty, and gracious professionalism. And courage. I know if I had not joined the program and had this opportunity to come up here in front of all of you, I would not be able to. Thank you for listening to me. Please give the same attention to Kelly Hotchkiss, who is speaking about media and her experiences.
Chairman, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Kelly Hotchkiss. That's spelled K-E-L-L-Y-H-O-T-C-H-K-S-S. And I'm a member of the Egan Robotics team.
Closer. Closer to the microphone, Kelly. Thank you.
Thank you. I've been on the team for 1 year, even though I'm sophomore. I joined the team because I was acquainted with too many of its members the previous year. What I heard from the group was robotics was unique and electrifying. From the beginning, I joined the business group. I was their connections personnel, where I dealt with information on members of the team and the companies that sponsored us. I also helped, Patrick and I also, sent out a newsletter each week to update the companies. I've gained many experiences and life skills from joining this program, from learning how to write a proper paper and send proper emails to improving my organization skills. It has already helped out with many aspects of my life. I'm doing better with some of my school assignments. My parents have noticed how my responsibility has gone up, and I also got promoted at my job. They also how I became the leader of the media group. I'd been around cameras my entire life, but when I learned that there's a media group opening up after the six-week build season, I jumped at the opportunity. In the media group, there are three other kids that work with video and two kids that work with still cameras. Duck and CJ work with the video and editing, and Wesley is our student mentor with the big camera over there. And Patrick and Taryn took still pictures of the events throughout the season. When I joined media, I noticed that the group was unorganized. And nobody had taken a role in the leadership. So using the skills I acquired while working with business, I organized everyone, set up roles for everyone, and was managing what everybody was doing. Before I knew it, I had aspired to be the leader of the group. What the media group does is capture, throughout the season, capture key events and produces various videos like the one you saw earlier. Right now, we are currently piecing together our banquet video, which is a story through about the season that we had. Thank you for your time, and now John and Mr. Lynch will continue speaking.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Any questions for the team here? Okay. Mr. Lynch. And you're going to bring us home.
Almost.
Would you like to go first?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senators, my name is Jim Lynch. My official role with the team is faculty advisor. Back about a little over a year, well, now 2 years ago now, principal came to me and said, we've earned a grant. Medtronics has come through. They're looking for 10 new teams in Minnesota, as Mark Lawrence alluded to in his previous introduction. And we had a businessman step up and said, Eagan High School will have a team. And then he came to Eagan High School and said, would you like to have a team? And that's how this all started. My principal came to me, and I absolutely jumped at the opportunity. My background, I've been at Eagan High School since it opened. I've been teaching for 19 years. I'm a biology chemistry teacher by training. My current position is a technology integration specialist. I was recruited away from the classroom about 12 years ago to work on that. So I've had plenty of science classroom experience. One of the things that I've seen typically in a science classroom is in a 40 to 5 to 50 minute classroom period, it's very constricting. And one of the key things that we try to do, good science teachers will do, is try to teach problem solving, inquiry of science. And it's very difficult to do that. When I saw this as an opportunity, I studied a little bit and I realized this is gold. This is a chance for kids to really truly solve problems and to really integrate and use all of the knowledge that they're gaining in their coursework. In 19 years of teaching, this is the most inspired I've ever seen students in terms of their relationship to wanting to learn things. And I could give you story after story, but I will not. I will pass it on to a very fine mentor of ours, John Condon from Lockheed Martin, electrical engineer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm here today as a former member, a student member of FIRST, a current practicing engineer, and a mentor for Eagan High School robotics team, Team 2220. So in 2001, a group of students and I got together with some local businesses and teachers at Arrowhead High School in Wisconsin, and we started a robotics team in FIRST Robotics. And there we experienced the exact same thing that these students are going through right now, the six-week deadline, which is ridiculous, and all the technical issues, all the technical problems, and the things that they make you go through to actually get a working robot. I started noticing during that little six-week time, when I was going back to my physics class, I was seeing the robot in the physics classes. When I was calculating out the rotational inertia of something, I had already done that, doing that a week later, earlier in my robot. And that kind of thing kept on and on. Even through, I went to the University of Minnesota for electrical engineering for my bachelor's and master's. And I was figuring out why there were things wrong with my robot that I built 3 years ago when I was in my E&M class, electromagnetics. And I go, oh, that's why that was not working 3 years ago. And so it kept on coming back. And I had all this practical experience. And all these equations weren't just equations and numbers. There were equations and numbers that actually had to work, and I had to get them working and make them into a real robot. And I still see a lot of that today when I work at Lockheed Martin. I have to work in a very dynamic environment, tight, tight deadlines, and things have to work. You don't come to these competitions with a robot that doesn't work, that isn't acceptable. You make it work, and you just keep on trying until it works. You don't want to have the problem partially right. When you do a math test, you could get a B. Well, a B in a robot, when you have an arm, will make it break. Something will obviously go wrong. So you see that kind of thing over and over, this practical experience, and I use it every day throughout work. And that six-week deadline, you have to create this robot, and it forces you to do teamwork. You can't possibly do this by yourself. You can't do it alone. You need to use everybody's talents. You need to use them all individually, and you need to combine together and get this working. On top of just the technical things that you learn, when I was a student, we went out and we presented over and over and over again to try to raise the money to build the robot. And that just gives you the confidence and the public speaking abilities and all the different things that you really don't get an opportunity to do in just a normal classroom setting. And, you know, in just these 6 weeks, I've seen a huge development in the students. Things like Jason, his perseverance while he was working on the autonomous mode, working just weeks and weeks, and then finally getting it working minutes before a match and trying it working just live testing of the code. Lewis going in, collaborating with all the other teammates and all the other groups to make sure that the piece he was designing would actually fit inside of the robot and function along with all the other subsystems. Tim, his willingness to come in there, and with, I think he had maybe an hour of training before we deemed him our electrical lead, or the person who was going to make sure that all those wires were working properly. And then Devin and Dana's experience and their growth as a leader was just phenomenal in just that six-week timeline. So in closing, I'd like to add that there's right now in the technical community, I think there's a large concern over STEM education, and this program is a great way to tap into some of that energy. I know that through the FIRST program, engineers have spent hundreds of hours a year individually, 100 hours a year or so. And this isn't some in another activity, they may not be willing to put in that kind of time, but there's a huge amount of potential energy in that, and I think it's a great way to get into some of their technology and skills. Thank you. And I would like to bring up Mark Lawrence to
ask questions.
Oh, yeah, questions.
Thank you.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Condon, do you have any relationship with the High Tech Association? Have you presented to them? Are they familiar with what your organization is doing? Does anybody know that?
You mean I,
for,
Mr. Chairman?
Just in, as background, the High Tech Association is a group of...
No, I can cover that. We've been talking to Taylor Pettis. We have a very good...
State your name, please.
Oh, Mark Lawrence. L-A-W-R-E-N-C-E. We've been talking to Taylor. We didn't get them as involved this year as I would have liked. Last year we participated in the STEM conference. This year we wanted to participate in the outstate STEM conferences, but it was right during our build season, and it's really hard to take kids away from building the robot to go to a conference. So that didn't work out very well. So we've got to have some discussions with them next year about doing something similar. That Life Sciences Alley is very involved. Dana Doyle, who's on the she's Vice President of Development over there, is on our planning committee. So they're very active with us. So, you know, I guess I agree with you. I'm a little embarrassed to say we're not more involved with the High Tech Association because that's sort of their home turf.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I just raise it because to Senator Stoltzman's point of we would like all schools to be able to take advantage of this, that partnership might be a way to bring that around the state. And so I think you're doing an outstanding job, and I'm inspired just watching you. But it seemed to me that that might be an avenue to expand this more statewide.
Senator Wiegert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And on that point on relationships, Mr. Lynch, I understand that you may be related to a noted meteorologist on the Good Neighbor Station. Is that correct?
Yeah, Senator Wiger, Mike is related to me.
Okay. And Mr. Lynch, the inspiration you provide as a teacher, it's so exciting. And I'd like to expand, if we could, on Senator Saltzman's question about curriculum application. And if you could just offer additional thoughts, in addition to the obvious value as an extracurricular activity, curriculum applications you see as a teacher and how we get students excited.
So perhaps, Mr. Chair, if I could add just to help him.
Senator Saltzman.
So it's one question. Sometimes kids to jump into something like this, it's like, how could I ever participate? And you've obviously talked about so many different ways. But I think that we talk continuously about kids, you know, we're pushing kids to take more and more math and science. And as a parent who sort of watched high school kids for 8 years now, I wonder, how can we sort of put into our science courses, particularly activities like this on obviously a smaller scale, so they see the potential. We've heard at the Science Museum last year from the Boston Museum of Science director how he took a college course at Tufts because kids were dropping out of engineering because they were just tired of the regular engineering classes. But when they started applications of how long it takes a turkey to cook based on, you know, some different sorts of formulas, they started to get it. So how can we take something like this and put it into our curriculum so that then our young people see, oh, I want to take this farther and then become involved in these more intensive experiences? So maybe to build on Senator Wiegert's point.
Sure, I will.
Mr. Lynch.
I'm sorry. Senator Carlson, Senator Wiegert, Senator Saltzman, sorry. I will answer this question. I think I'll pass it on to Mark Lawrence to talk about Project Lead the Way when I'm finished. I can tell you just from my experience at Egan High School, obviously a course like this really is inspiring. I started a course years and years ago. I'm a biology guy primarily. Why am I in the robotics team? I don't know. It just looked really interesting, and I have a son who's interested in it. But we started a summer science course where we bring kids up to Lake of the Woods, and they go on a five-day canoe trip. And over the years, I saw over and over again, kids would then come back and take more science courses. So the enhancement of those outside the classroom activities, I think, really obviously has a strong connection. To answer the question about how to bring it into the classroom, Egan High School, I'll brag a little bit like Representative Wardlow did, our science numbers are actually growing, and they have been growing for quite a while. I'll give you a couple of examples of what some of our physics teachers are doing right now. They'll do a mousetrap car competition when they're teaching all the, you know, the mechanics and physics. The kids are actually building, I forget what it's called exactly, like a pipe organ type thing when they're talking about harmonics and that kind of thing. Those kinds of hands-on activities, and they kind of weave in what we do in terms of a competition. It's a little bit of a competition to see who can make the best one. Those are just a couple little pieces, and I honestly think kids are buzzing. While we were going out to Hardware Hank, our buddy Hardware Hank, and buying parts for that, there were hordes of physics kids coming in and buying mousetraps and parts and cars and things, and really fired up and spending hours at Hardware Hank trying to talk to these guys and trying to apply the physics that they're doing. So those are just little snippets. But there's actually, we competed in Milwaukee with the team from Appleton, Wisconsin. Our team number is 2220. We're relatively new. We're 2 years old. Appleton's team is 93. They've been around a very long time. They actually have sort of pushed the curriculum back the other way, where they've got a robotics curriculum in their coursework that was inspired by the robotics team. And I can honestly, this is a very young program in Minnesota, but I can see that happening in Minnesota. It's happened all over the country. And this is probably a good time to segue to Mark Lawrence, because he has some of those stories.
Yeah, well, just on that note, team number 10 happens to be Benilde St. Margaret. They're no longer competing in FIRST Robotics. They're actually competing in search and rescue robots at a university level. And they bowed out of the program when they got a large endowment from one of the engineering companies in town and decided to put it into the curriculum. They actually teach a course called Advanced Competitive Robotics. And they have about 150 kids out of a class of about 275 take that course. So it's become very, very popular. They learn all aspects of what it takes to build a robot, from CAD to prototyping to the actual physics, the metallurgy, and those kinds of things that you need to know about. You know, when you build a robot like that, you've got to start worrying about stresses and strains and, you know, how strong the metal is and some of those kinds of things. We mentioned Project Lead the Way. You know, that's actually a program that has a number of modules that fit right into the curriculum. There's an extensive training that teachers go through. There are five different classes that are taught at the middle school level, and there's eight different classes taught at the senior high school level. It's an adopted curriculum all across the United States. There's a couple hundred schools within the state teaching it now, and a lot of it's hands-on learning. You know, it's really built around modules where you try and teach concepts and ideas in a module, and then you move on to the next module and you attack some other kind of problem. But it's a lot like Jim said, where you build little cars, you build rocket ships, you do videography and learn how to edit various types of video input and that kind of stuff. So that's a well-known curriculum. It's being adopted very rapidly across the state to augment the traditional science and mathematics courses. And it's a lot of times it's an elective, though. I know I sit on the technology curriculum committee at Edina, and we're going to actually put it in middle school as a required course. So it will replace sort of the general sciences course that the kids had to take in 7th and 8th grade. And believe it or not, the first one is robotics.
Can I jump in to finish off that thought? Having taught science for 12 years, I taught anatomy and physiology. It's a high-level accelerated track-type course. And I'll give you a little snippet. The most inspired my students were, I would typically start a unit and give the kids a case, much like, you know, some of the TV shows where they would have to have a patient with symptoms. They didn't know anything about the material at the time. But then as I started teaching the material, I would let them ask questions each day, and they really were starting to, in a sense, teach themselves, because the material became much more important, because they wanted to find out what the answer was. And it's really all about problem solving and inquiry-based learning. One of the things that I admire so much about our program is watching our mentors help our kids learn how to problem solve. And if we can figure out a way to get our technical professional mentors, John and a number of others, we're very fortunate to have a lot of them, working with our science teachers and developing curriculum where the kids aren't learning just about science, but they're actually doing science. Sadly, I see a lot of science teachers teaching science as it's a factual-based information and not really an inquiry-based methodology. And I think that's flat-out boring. It's like playing a football game, learning about football just by studying the rules and never actually playing the game. How boring would that be? It's the same idea in science.
Great. Senator Saltzman.
Senator Fallop. Mr. Chair, you talked about how in Edina they're looking at this being a replacement class. And so what I'm interested in knowing is if, lead the way, Mr. Lawrence, if you're looking to the College Board, that they would ever consider this as an advanced placement class. And the reason I ask is that there's such an emphasis within so many of our schools that I don't necessarily agree with, by the way, about, you know, advanced placement classes are where we're pushing many of our kids, which I would argue isn't really always engaging them the way I'd like to see them engaged to follow up on this. So in high schools where we have, you know, students who are and then our universities as well are saying kind of the, like, you know, traditional science courses, you know, like chemistry, physics, biology. What are you sensing, or that this, I think, is a challenge? I guess maybe it's a question and also just a comment, because to me this is and we have to head this way, but there are some barriers perhaps in how we've traditionally structured science. So have you had any experience with that?
And
you are smiling, so maybe you have a good response.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, I have opinions.
And that's why you're here.
Yeah, that's why I'm here. That's why, you know, pretty much do full-time robotics with the kids. You know, do I ever see Project Lead the Way being an AP kind of course? I don't, because it's so much hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's really going to be an elective, which is, you know, we struggle with that at Edina, and it's mostly because of pressure from the parents that they want their kids booked into these AP classes, and the more AP classes your kid takes, the better off they are at getting into a college. It's very interesting, and we'll bring this point up in a minute. There's now $10 million of scholarships devoted specifically for students in FIRST, and that's growing at about 10% per year. There's 105 colleges that are giving out scholarships, full-ride scholarships. The University of Minnesota is one of them, specifically for kids in FIRST. So they see changing the way they deal with students also. So it's kind of a sociological change that we're trying to deal with, that learning is much more than, you know, the book work, rote memorization, all those kinds of things. You know, it's what you see here. You know, I mean, this is a pretty hard act to follow when you have to, you know, come up and speak after kids like this that are so articulate in talking about things that, you know, when I went to school, I never dealt with until I was in industry and actually went out into business, and they're actually doing this every single day. You know, that's the way they're living their lives now. And, you know, there's every team has got anecdotal evidence to all that. I just put up this slide called the Brandeis Study. You have an executive summary in your packet. It was done a couple years ago. And the idea behind that study was to actually compare kids that are in the FIRST program with a like group of kids that are not in the program, and to see if, in fact, what we're talking about here, we're really talking about changing their lives, we're talking about changing the culture that these kids grow up in, is that really happening? And, in fact, it really is. I mean, you look at the numbers, and it's not just percentage gains. It's 2 times, 3 times, and in some cases 6 and 7 times, depending on what you're measuring as far as the students going on into industry, higher education, advanced degrees, staying in school. You know, it's remarkable the difference it makes when you give these kids a goal. And believe me, building a robot like that is a very, very hard goal. And they achieve it. You know, they step up, they do the work. I know everybody wants to get rid of the 6-week build season. You know, if you make it 8 weeks, they're going to work that hard for 8 weeks. If you make it 12 weeks, they're going to work that hard for 12 weeks. So 6 weeks is a good amount of time. You can, you know, obviously accomplish a lot. If you have the teamwork and you have the support community with the mentors and the whole FIRST community, because these kids, you know, the community is worldwide. You know, when they get on these websites, when they're talking to teams, they're, you know, our team put up our marketing video, and it was picked off the web by the kids in Israel because they wanted to get more teams in Israel. They pulled the source, and they dubbed it in Hebrew and used that to promote teams in Israel, and they now have a regional in Israel, and they've got about 50 teams. So, you know, those kind of things are experiences you don't ever get out of a classroom, you know, and this stuff works. They've, you know, all the kids have had that experience now with dealing with somebody in a different country, making it work. So,
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all for coming today. And I'm not surprised by the Brandeis Report findings, because I think we've seen presented here to us today extraordinarily well-spoken students. Students that are presenting themselves in a very professional kind of way. You know, we often have people come to testify and adults that are flustered, they're nervous. And, you know, if that, you know, those feelings were ranging amongst you, you know, you presented extremely well. So I'm not surprised with those findings at all, because I've seen them here in the room today. The leadership skills that the kids talked about that they learned about through this project, and you know, the self-confidence that it builds in this program, and you know, I think that I'm really glad that people are acknowledging those collateral skill sets as being developed in the students, as well as just the technology, because it really is a lot more than just the technology. And I wanted to just congratulate all the students that participated in this project and encourage you to think big, because I know this is a really exciting thing, and we are feeling your excitement here in the room. I think we're feeling all of the inspiration that you felt on this project. But, you know, there is a huge future for you out there in robotics. And while this might seem a little rudimentary and try to pick up giant balls and stuff like that, I just want to tell you that my husband is a urologist, and he works at St. Mary's Duluth Clinic, and he does robotic surgery. And so can you imagine constructing a machine where a doctor can sit with levers and screws and all sorts of little manipulations here, and across the room you are controlling a robot that goes inside and does extremely delicate surgery that you can't do with your big fat fingers. Mm-hmm. So there's just a tremendous opportunity here. And I'm a nurse, and I'm really see all the applications for healthcare in the future. But can you imagine having somebody be able to sit at a desk or an office and go online, say it's Taipei or Paris or wherever, and do robotic surgery to populations of people that don't have the skilled specialists in those areas? So, I mean, that's just one piece, and I think you guys have been talking about, you know, the Lockheed Martin sorts of opportunities and Medtronic and that sort of thing. So I think this future is wide open for you, and I just encourage you to stick with it and think big, because I think this is the direction the world is going.
Thank you. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think this is a fabulous presentation. When I was 17, I'm going to brag a little, I won the New England Science Fair. So it was the equivalent of kind of what you were doing. We didn't have a lot of mentors, though. I was in the basement doing my thing pretty much alone. Even our teachers didn't mentor us much. So things have come a long way. I wound up being an art teacher, though. And as I was listening to Kelly and Jason and Madison, with all the glamour that surrounds science and robotics and all this sexy stuff, we sometimes forget that the backbone that makes it all work is communication. Whether it's communication through video or through websites or through people who can organize databases or people who can write code to make the machine do. It's communication. And sometimes I worry that in our emphasis on science, engineering, mathematics, that we forget that the backbone is communication, that the relationships we develop with each other and the relationships we develop with our technology are critical. And it's all about that kind of communication. And can I tell my son's story?
Sure.
My son graduated from White Bear Lake High School, went on to Boston University, did a double major in physics and computational science, went on to Berkeley as a computational physicist. He's all of 26. He helped launch 5 satellites about a year ago, February. And his job was to write the computer code that made those satellites do whatever they're supposed to do. They lined up to measure the impact of solar storms. My son minored in art. When the satellites were launched, it was a successful launch, it was on TV, it was great. They found out that they couldn't hear the messages come back. And the lead scientist is pulling his hair out. Can you imagine the amount of dollars that were going down the tube? And they didn't know what to do. And my son, who was 25 at the time, said, "I can find them." And he knew through his art training, he could picture where they were. He knew from his mathematics and his computational science training how to find them and turn the satellites so that the antennae pointed the right way and the project was saved. So you have to put a lot of learning together to really be successful. And I wish you all well. I'm glad you've got such a mixed team with such a mixed group of skills, because in fact that's what's going to make us successful in the future. And congratulations for all you've done. Who is the website person? Is that person here?
They are not. They're not in attendance today.
Well, they should be congratulated too, because that, of course, is a part of the communication team that didn't get as much recognition as I think we all owe them. So thank you.
Excuse me, one of our web people is here. I'm sorry, I didn't realize. Senator Carlson. Doug Doan.
Oh.
He's also a media person as well, but he helped out with the website.
Very critical skills for the future, so you've got a great team.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, we don't usually talk like this. I mean, I've learned about from Senator Erickson Ropes and heard from Senator Rummel, and so you can see what you have touched off, you know, among us. And I also wanted you to know that we as a committee have been wrestling with the No Child Left Behind requirements this year. And what we've been talking about as a committee is our concern that the kind of rigid testing that is being imposed is stopping creativity. And we all believe and have been trying to work on how we can figure out a way that we can both comply but still foster the kind of creativity that you've demonstrated today. And so I leave here affirmed that we are on the right track, and I want you all to know, students, that we know that creativity is where it's at, and so we're going to keep working on that. So how many of you would like it if we were not, if you did not have to comply with the No Child Left Behind tests? I thought you might say that. Well, again, thank you, Senator Carlson, for having these guests today.
Well, thank you, Senator Bonoff. And now I guess I need to make a couple of comments myself, that this is infectious. This is why I did want you to come in and talk to the senators here and tell your story, because this is to some degree where I came from. I got involved. I had got the fire in the belly, because I touched things and I took them apart or put them together. And that's what, when I came there on February 17th in that afternoon, I didn't expect to spend very much time there, but it was just so interesting. And I learned so much. And when I drove away, I knew that I had to have you tell your story to the Senate. Mm-hmm. And this is where it's all at. And I'm just absolutely thrilled with you all coming here. And, of course, Mr. Lynch is one of my family's favorite. Now, my story is my wife teaches with Mr. Lynch. My son and my daughter went to Egan High School. My son and Mr. Lynch was his mentor also in school, and they have been, I think, very positive. All of us have been very positively affected by Egan High School. And now, do you have any other final comments? Did we have one more person that was going to speak?
No, I was just going to kind of wrap it up.
Okay. Mr. Lawrence.
We plan on expanding the program. As I mentioned before, you know, our goal is to have 80 teams next year. You know, we're currently well represented in the metro. We've got about 38 teams. All the inner city schools are represented, both in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Our goal next year is to get teams from St. Cloud and Alexandria and Fergus Falls and Bemidji and a lot of the outlying areas more than we had this year. It's going to take some creative funding to do that, because they don't have the corporate resources to tap into like we've got in the metro area. But people are stepping up, and we're going to go after some of the foundations like the Blandon Foundation and some of those folks. You know, now that we have a competition in town, I can't tell you the increased support we got out of people coming to that event. We had a VIP event and invited them to stay and watch the competition, and I think it was, you know, infectious is the right word. You know, passion is another word that pops up a lot with this activity, because it does catch you, it grabs you, you realize that it is something very, very different than you've ever seen before. And getting the funders there made a huge difference. And we've already gotten commitments for more teams from, say, the Cargill Foundation and the General Mills Foundation. You mentioned the outstate teams. This year we used the University of Minnesota Foundation to fund a lot of those teams. The Duluth team was funded by the University of Minnesota Duluth and Cirrus Design. So we can go find the companies. You know, Polaris had a team up in Roseau. So, and you know, we'll get a team, you know, down the road in Hibbing this year, and you know, on and on and on. You know, so once one team gets it, we can grow it even further. But having the competition here, it greatly decreases the costs of you know, going to Milwaukee is, you know, probably $5,000. Just for transportation costs and hotels. So, you know, we're gonna continue to expand. We actually hope to have two fields here next year and host 100 teams. So we'll be at Mariucci and Williams Arena both. So I would invite you to come. You know, you can put on your calendar. It's probably going to be the first week in April. And we'll send you all invites, believe me. Because it is quite a spectacular thing. And we do like coming and talking to you. If you ever need us to show up at any kind of event, the kids, as you can tell, love to talk about their robots. They love to show them off. We're actually going to have some competitions this summer and this fall so that we can use that as a recruiting tool to get more people to see this in action. And the kids love to use it. I mean, there's nothing worse than building your robot and then only being able to compete once with it, you know, especially when the matches are so short. So we're going to try and expand that effort as we go on. So thank you very much, and I think we'll stick around for a while. If you want to actually see it run, we can take it out in the hall and you know, show you how it works.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? With that, I want to thank you very much for coming up here. I want to thank you for all the time you've put into this presentation, and especially the time that you've put into competing. This is absolutely fantastic and very infectious, and I think you've infected everybody from the committee here. So thank you very much. And with that, the Education Committee is adjourned.